Namaste. Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 2, At the Forefront.
We hope all of you are doing well and liked our episode on climate anxiety. Before we proceed, Sitashma, how nice is our new jingle?
Simone, I was thinking the same. It sounds upbeat, it sounds fun, and it really captures the energy we want to pass on through Anthropoz.
Exactly. We thank Tashi Lama for creating this fun tune for us. Thank you so much for capturing the essence of Anthropoz in this tune. We want to urge our listeners to give Tashi some love. She's a great musician. Her social media will be linked in the description box below.
Yes, thank you so much, Tashi. We really appreciate your work. Before we proceed, as the Nepali New Year is right around the corner, Naya Barsha ko hardik mangal maya shubakamana. Yo Naya Barsha le sabai ko jivan ma naya khushi, naya umang ra naya josh le pradan garos bhanne hamro asha cha.
Yo Naya Barsha, Anthropoz ko dwara ajhai dherai kura kani garne ra naya kura haru sikne mauka milos bhanne hamro asha cha. Also, we wanted to wish everyone a happy belated Women's Day. We released some snippets of our episode earlier this month to celebrate this day, but we are excited to finally release our episode. In case you missed the quotes and the clips we shared on Instagram on Women's Day, please follow us on Instagram. You can find them in our highlight reels for this episode.
So, perfect segue to our episode today, Simone. So At the Forefront will be an episode that highlights the relationship between gender and climate change. And to help us understand this, we have spoken with two amazing climate justice activists from Uganda, Ida Naku and Isaac Santumbwe.
Ida Naku is a climate and gender justice activist from Kampala, Uganda. She's part of the Rise Up movement started by climate activist Vanessa Nakate, Fridays for Future Uganda, and Fridays for Future Most Affected People and Areas. Ida has devoted her free time to making tangible contributions toward a better tomorrow for all young women and girls affected by the climate crisis.
Isaac Santumbwe is also a climate justice activist from Uganda, with a focus on engaging with frontline communities and the empowerment of young women and girls. He too is involved with the Rise Up movement like Ida. He is also the founder of Girl on the Move Initiative, which is dedicated to the education, training, and elevation of vulnerable young women and girls who have been affected by the pressures of the climate crisis across Uganda.
Ida and Isaac, welcome to Anthropoz.
So to start the episode, we know that both of you are a part of the Rise Up movement. So we want to ask you, what is the Rise Up movement?
Thank you so much for the question. And we're really humbled to be here. And we're looking forward to a great conversation. Rise Up movement, this is an organization or a movement that was started by our fellow activist, and we all know her. She's called Vanessa Nakate. Vanessa has traveled a couple of countries. She has attended a couple of huge conversation spaces, but it came to her realization that activists from the global south, particularly Africa, they are underrepresented. These voices are underrepresented. These conversation spaces are dominated by activists from the global north. So her fight, the reason why she founded Rise Up, is to see that activists, especially those doing grassroots activism, because she believes they have the ingenuity, they have the talent, they have the competence, and they have stories to tell, stories that can bring change, solutions that they can bring on table that are substantial for the benefit of the people and the planet. So that's why she founded Rise Up, so that voices from Africa are united for the common good of preaching the gospel of climate justice, not only in their countries, not only in Africa as a continent, but also globally to the rest of the spheres in the world. Because still, we believe that every activist, every youth activist has a story to tell, and every story has a solution to give, and every solution has a life it saves. So that's why we have rise up, and the numbers are growing immensely. You know, a vision that, you know, Vanessa has is huge. She built it with passion from an individual, and now see, you know, unwavering numbers coming through to see that the climate, you know, justice issue is demanded rightfully and in big numbers.
Maybe to add a little bit on what Isaac said, many times I feel some activists don't receive support from their family, support from their friends. So another reason Vanessa created this movement is for support. When you're in the Rise Up movement, you don't feel alone, whatever idea you bring on board. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your answers. The Rise Up movement sounds amazing. And like you said, activists, people from the Global South are often underrepresented, and their stories are often unheard, and the problems are very different as well in the Global South and aren't represented well enough. So I just wanted to ask you, how do environmental challenges differently affect women in general, and specifically the women of the Global South?
Thank you so much, Simon, for that question. So women in general, women and girls, we're already a section of the society that is already pushed to the edge, you know? So when we have a climate challenge, a climate crisis or environmental challenge that comes up, the effects of a crisis will not be fair to everyone. The vulnerable groups are the ones that will face it more. And that's the women. An example is the women. So I read a statement that in times of a disaster, women are more likely to die 14 times more than men because of a climate-related disaster. When we go to the Global South, gender roles have already been defined for us in the Global South by society. So you'll find that women are the ones that do most of the domestic work, like fetching water, collecting firewood. We still have people in rural areas using firewood. So when we see a drought coming, that means there's drying up of streams, and which means that women will have to travel longer distances to just collect water. And that will mean that they're going to be exposed to different challenges like sexual abuse, gender-based violence, you get. So the effects even go beyond what we can see, what people talk about, because often mental health is something that is under-discussed in the Global South, but these women, their mental health is affected. Their reproductive health is also affected. In my own country, there were floods in Chisoro District, Western Uganda. And a report recently came out and said that 2.5 women were the most affected by these floods. So, and oftentimes when you bring up this topic that, you know, gender is a climate issue, people will always say, no, that can't be, it's far-fetched. But when you actually look at the effects that climate crisis brings to the women, you'll realize that, you know, this is something that needs to be discussed. Thank you.
And these women and girls, you know, they are dependent on the natural resources, you know, for their livelihoods. You talk about, resources, you know, that is water, that is firewood, heating, for cooking for their families, prepare food for their families. So that puts them, you know, in a position of being disproportionately affected by the climate crisis, because this will raise a burden. It will raise a burden to them. That means longer hours will be spent to fetch water. That means girls will even have to miss school. That means now that that is a challenge to the girl child. She won't be able to, you know, to fully achieve her dream or potentially, get out, her talent. And we must also understand that they face, the social and economic, political, resources and barriers that limit them to see that their coping, capacity is, given, energy. And this is said in a way that they are dependent on their natural resources, for their livelihoods. So all these things, unequal access to land, decision making, still puts them in that position, as a weaker gender, as, a gender that is not fit, to sit in conversation, climate conversation spheres. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ida and Isaac. And Isaac, like you said, women are like kind of portrayed as the weaker gender, right? So it kind of like sets us up for the next question. Media and articles, like often, even just in common like discourse, we often portray like women, they often portray women merely as victims of climate change, right? So what are the implications of depicting women as victims rather than agents of change? And why is it important? I mean, why is the recognition of women's contribution still limited?
Firstly, the implication, climate change affects women and girls, differently. Women and men differently. And when we talk about women, we also put in girls in the context. So this face, particular vulnerabilities resulting from the culture norms, because we still in Africa, these culture norms still exist and they are lower, social economic status in society. Women's domestic roles often make them disproportionate users of natural resources such as water, firewood, and forest products. So as these resources become scarce, women face increased work burden and may further fall into poverty as a result. As we know, Africa, the backbone of the economy is agriculture. In rural areas, when you go in rural areas, women and girls, when they go to their gardens, the yield is supposed to be for sale so that they can get money and also for food consumption. So in case a catastrophe befalls, a community, that means they won't have food for home consumption, they won't have food to sell so that they can, be able to sustain their families. So the fact that they are the stewards of these homes, so in case of scarcity of resources, it pushes them in a corner as a weaker agenda when climate crisis happens.
To answer the question, why the recognition is still limited, there's discrimination against women, and the gender inequality is the reason many women feel in the back, are still in the shadows, yet they have a lot of good solutions. Women are actually at the heart, women and girls are at the heart of the solutions of the climate crisis. So unless we deal with the gender inequality, we cannot have the climate justice. Thank you.
Thank you for your wonderful answers. Still talking about, being portrayed as victims, and like you guys already mentioned that sometimes activists in the global South don't get enough recognition. We found this article by Edgar Klusener, which we will be linking in our description box below, which further explores this idea by discussing the idea of how women in the global South are not only often portrayed as victims, but as victims needing to be saved by the West. What do you think about this?
That statement of women in the global South needing to be saved, or people in general, I disagree with that statement. I rather choose to see it as the West taking responsibility for their part in the climate crisis. We all know that historically, Africa is responsible for only 4% of global emissions. And when you look at women from the global South, they have little to no emission. Actually, a family, you might find that a family in the global South of like 10 people has less emissions than like a family of four in Europe or in UK. So I disagree with that statement, because the West has to take responsibility. They have to, we have to, as activists, we have to fight and see that there's a fund set up for the loss and damage suffered by the women in the global South. There is climate finance, you know, so that these women in the global South can have access to sustainable energy.
It's not that it's the West to save. It's, as Ida said, it's their responsibility. But we must also understand that women, you know, they already have, you know, solutions. They already have solutions, you know, to the climate crisis. They have solutions to the gender inequality that is happening. All they need is empowerment. That's why, as a climate justice, you know, gender activist, advocate, you know, for the rights of women and girls, because these are people who feel the core, you know, brunt effects of the climate crisis, based on the fact that they are the caretakers of these homes. So what do we need? We need to see that, you know, they are put at the center of climate action. Their initiatives are being funded because they have the solutions already in their communities. They just need, you know, that authentic push. They just need that right, you know, funding to see that their activities or their initiatives move from just an individual to the rest of the community. And I believe that will be like a reasonable scale up if you want to really fight for climate justice. So it's very, very important to empower women and girls, because it is a solid climate solution.
Totally agree with you. And these inequalities created for women, I feel like, I mean, we've kind of like talked about it previously, but media kind of really plays a role in it, right? So a report found that only like 15% of those interviewed in major news articles in the United States, or like the global North, were female. And however, like, people get shocked with this number, but then the case is like worse for the global South countries, where female sources are even less used than anonymous sources. Feminist media studies show that in your country, in Uganda, where 56% of the women are, female sources are left out of prominent newspapers while covering climate change topics. So why do you think this gender gap exists in media reporting of climate change?
It's actually a very interesting question, because for me, I think it cuts across, like, it brings a lot of things out, like it exposes a lot of things that our society has. So I think this media gap goes back to the system, the structural inequalities that we have. The system decides who is important, who is to be heard. And if the system is deciding that, that means it's spreading out to other sectors. And in this case, we're talking about the media. So if the structure has decided that less women are going to be heard, it's the same thing you're going to find in the media. So the problem is rooted in the system. So unless we change that system, we can't completely cover up this media gap.
Oh yes, Africa in particular, still, I'll talk about, you know, the traditional and cultural norms that are still existent in our communities, where they don't see women as important figures when it comes to, you know, important issues to be discussed and substantial solutions to be put on table. Yet we must understand that these women, they possess a wealth of knowledge when it comes to their environment and everything, you know, that pertains in it. And they know the solutions, you know, that can bring sustainability, that can help us, you know, have a just and fair and livable atmosphere. So it goes back to the culture norms and traditional, you know, beliefs that we still have here, because that also, you know, creates that atmosphere where they are not allowed in decision, you know, making rooms. You know, we still have fewer numbers in decision making rooms, but we must understand that actually we have some examples here in our country, Uganda, women who have led initiatives, women who have, you know, stood for you know, for a period of time, and have made changes, like, you know, our former ED, who was a lady, who was called Jennifer Musi. I don't know whether you guys can Google about her. She was our former executive director of the Kampala, you know, city, you know, council authority. She did a great job in the city, and by the time she left leadership, there was tremendous change. There was something we will talk about for years and years.
Thank you so much, Ida and Isaac. That was so well put, and I feel very inspired listening to you both. So now we're going to move to talk about some of the slogans that you have posted on social media. Slogans posted by Isaac, it reads, "Investing in girls' education for climate action should be a priority." And Ida recently posted one as well, saying, "Education of girls and women builds resilience." So can you both please elaborate a little on education and education of girls and how this compares with our topic today?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Most of the times, you know, you may get on social media and put out a message just for a day, to pass the day. But it's very important that you reach a time where you have to elaborate what you're putting out for the global community, you know, to see. Okay, now, education, actually, the project drawdown, you know, sees that it's so that education lays like a foundation for vibrant, you know, lives for girls, you know, and women, their families and communities at large. So it's one of the most powerful levers available for avoiding emissions. We are talking about avoiding like 105 gigatons of emissions by, you know, 2050. So that is very, very important, because women with more years of education, that means they'll have, you know, fewer, you know, children, and they'll actively manage their reproductive health. That means they'll be conscious of, you know, of their practices, they'll be conscious of the activities they're doing, and they'll have the knowledge of how they should live sustainably. So education is very, very important. It's very, very important. Actually, you know, Malala, you know, asserts or says, when you educate a girl, you educate a nation, which is very true, because one girl will get knowledge, but she will pass on the knowledge to millions of them, which is not the case with men. Men, I'm going to be honest, we tend to be, you know, a little bit mean. I don't know whether that's the right word to use, but this is a character for women. They love sharing. So education is a powerful tool, is a very, very powerful tool.
I can add anything on that, but maybe to talk about what I posted. Okay, so an increase in the global temperatures has an effect on higher rates of premature births. So the impact of an increase in the global temperatures can have a number of effects on women that are expectant. Look at a woman in the global south who is in an area that is experiencing drought. Such a lady or a woman, it can be very hard for them to have access to drinking water. And digging deep, when you're dehydrated during pregnancy, the hormones that your body can release, that can, they're like pregnancy-inducing hormones, I don't know, something like that. So these hormones can actually induce labor before the baby is due. Then another thing, when climate-related disasters happen, for example, a flood, the structures are destroyed. So look at things like hospitals. So a pregnant woman whose area has been affected by floods, this woman, it will be hard for them to get antenatal care. I can go on and on about how the climate crisis can affect, can lead to premature deaths, births, but I'll stop there for now.
Thank you so much, Ida and Isaac. I also actually have a follow-up for Isaac. Since you are talking about education for girls and women, I want to ask you about your initiative that you started, Girl on the Move. Could you talk a little about that as well?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Girl on the Move, I started it last year. I've had a couple of experiences, when it comes to community outreaches. In the year 2014, 2015, and 2016, I was, one of a few people who, participated in the public health campaign that was funded by USAID, that was known as OVLAM. It was a very huge campaign. And we used to go to communities. These are rural communities where, people depend on agriculture, but our focus was on, giving them health, education and relief. But when I joined, the climate movement, when I joined climate activism, it took me back to the years when I was working. I was like, okay, what was the driver of everything? What was the driver of girls, getting pregnant? What was the driver of girls, going out of school? What was the driver of gender-based violence in these homes? And it gave me an answer that the climate crisis was the primary driver, because these communities, you're reaching them and they have experienced, prolonged droughts of almost 6 months. They don't see rainfall, their crops are dried up, or, water levels have risen. They destroy their homes and families. So when I go to the question, Girl on the Move, I started it, so that I restore lives, I elevate lives of the affected girls and women by the climate crisis. And the communities I work in, these are communities that really, really, really need this help. Apparently the community where I'm working in, it's in the central region of Uganda, but in the rural areas, in a district, on the shores, of the lake, the waters of the lake rose, and they destroyed people's homes and farms, gardens. And at the same time, when the waters rose, they were experiencing prolonged droughts. And this drought, befell the communities for 6 months. If you go on my Twitter, you see the photos I posted. People's maize are dried up. I even posted a borehole where it takes 30 minutes for a jerrycan to get full. That is so absurd. And you could find a line of women and young girls just waiting for water. That means they were spending a lot of time just to fetch water. It was really devastating. But the reason why I took, Girl on the Move in this community is to see that it's like a coping measure. The crops have dried up. What else can you do so that you can get some money and live independent life, so that you can get some money and empower yourself where you want to? So I took like a skilling program, teaching them how to make, good clothes out of fabrics, so that they can be able maybe to sell to fishermen or to sell to people who come to villages, to pick a few produce from, certain, growers. So the initiative is there. Its aim is to elevate lives, to restore hope, to see that these young women and girls, achieve, they may not achieve their dreams, but it's something that can change their life. It is something that can give them hope. Actually, what we are planning right now with my team is to see that girls who really want to continue with primary education, you want to continue with secondary education, that is something provided for. Because yes, there are those you talk to and they're like, I want to continue with primary, I want to continue with secondary, I want to go to university. That is something in plan. But for starters, are like, okay, let's create a, you know, a skilling program so that these girls can be able to, you know, get something, learn a skill, you know, that can help them live independent lives, because it helps to, you know, stave away people from poverty. It helps to stave away these young girls and women from gender-based violence. And this helps to uplift gender equality in the community. Thank you. Thank you.
Isaac, what you're doing is absolutely amazing. And we would, you know, like love to like support your initiative as well. And this is just incredible because like, I mean, we also come from Global South country, Nepal, where, you know, patriarchy is still very prevalent. And just seeing like, seeing someone who's like, you know, from another Global South country, I'm sure it's going to inspire a lot of like young men in our country as well to take initiative, because it's just really important. So yeah, great job and kudos to you. This is so great. I'm kind of like speechless, and I think Simon is too. So kind of to move on this conversation, one of the main problems with environmental resilience programs and policies that are created to impact women, it's just like not effective when it's not created by women. Like, what do you have to say about that? And we would also, I mean, it might be a loaded question, but we would also really love to hear from both of you what some of the ideal local examples of some woman-led adaptations, strategies that you are aware of.
I would like to, you know, answer the first part, and I think Isaac can take on the second. So, you can't really, even if you're not, even if you are a woman, let's say from the global north, you can't formulate a policy for a situation you haven't really been through. So yes, also the men are on these boards, but there are some, like a few women from the global north on these boards. And I'm thinking, if you haven't experienced this firsthand, how can you formulate a policy? And most of the time, such policies have, there's a gap between the burdens or the situations they have to address and what the benefit that's actually there. But look at a situation where we're getting a young girl like me from the global south formulating a policy because I've experienced seasonal changes where I was expecting a wet season, I had a dry season. I've had a firsthand experience. So I think, when I'm formulating a policy, there's a lot of points that I will put into consideration and my policy will be more viable. So there'll be a really small gap, because we can't have a perfect policy, but there'll be a very small gap between the situation I'm trying to address and the benefit. And maybe to add on that, girls and women, Isaac had previously said that this, but we're half of the world's population. And if we're saying that women and girls are the most affected, why wouldn't we give women and girls a chance to actually formulate policies that are going to help with the climate crisis? Yes. So I think for it to be successful, we actually need women and girls in these rooms to make decisions concerning the policy. Women need to be heard. We can't have we can't be like, okay, women need to be heard, but still we're keeping them in the shadows. No, we can't have that. We can speak for ourselves. We have voices, we have ideas, we are informed, so we can speak for ourselves. We should be given a chance to be in these rooms. Thank you.
There is one I know, you know, except my initiative, Girl on the Move, which is you know growing. There is one I know, it's called Women Empowerment for Resilience and Adaptation Against Climate Change. It's a community of 1,642 women-led association, you know, representing more than 250,000 women that have pulled together their individual savings to generate a fund of $2,875,752 US dollars. So this initiative is run by an organization, of course, a Ugandan organization known as RUCOD. RUCOD, spelling RUCOD, and it's an NGO in Uganda. Of course, with financial support from the global organizations, UNDP, JFK International, Plan International, CODIDE of Netherlands, and USAID, of course, which comes in as a bigger, funder in these initiatives. So women, involved in this initiative borrowed, from this pool of savings to invest in innovative and, scalable, sustainable and replicable activities that, catalyze actions towards a low carbon and highly resilient future. So it goes back to what I said in the first place, that women have these solutions to the climate crisis and gender inequality. All they need is a structure, a streamlined structure and a funding so that they can be able, to execute fully, these programs, these plans they have, for the community, for themselves, for the community and for the future, because all of us, we are fighting, for a just, a just future, a sustainable and just future, okay? So if you think about all this, it shows you that they are not the weaker, gender, but they are agents. These are strong agents. These are people who can do something about it. All they need is support. Our fellow activists here, it may not, actually it links straight when it comes to, adaptation measures. Let's talk about renewable energy. Our fellow activists, Vanessa Nakate, she started the Vast Green Schools Project. We must understand that women, most of the rural schools, women are the ones responsible, or they are given that role of cooking food for the primary pupils. So they need, a cooking system which is sustainable, a cooking system which is clean, a cooking system which is going to, emit less, which is, contribute less, to the carbon, to the emission of, of carbon dioxide. So she started this like an adaptation measure. It may not be the ultimate solution, but it's something that can cause change. It is something that can provoke, other people to also look at it as something that is very important if you want to have a sustainable and just future. Evelyn Acham, I know you guys know about her. You check her. She plants trees. She goes to homes. She plants fruit trees, because here in Africa we believe a fruit tree cannot, be cut down. This is something which gives you food. So she does that, to show people a tree can give you food. A tree, can give you a shed for you and your families. Also to capture strong winds and carbon dioxide. So all these things, we are trying to channel women in that sphere of responsibility, in that sphere of, letting them know that this is your responsibility. This is what you have to do about it. This is the future atmosphere.
So maybe to add on the Vash Green School project, it also provides solar panels. So from reading about this project, for most of the schools that they've been able to install the solar panels for, yes, there's girls and boys, then there's also girls' schools and then boys' schools. And if we're talking about educating girls as one of the climate solutions, but they don't have, for example, electricity and it gets dark and maybe they want to add in a few hours of reading, that could be a problem hindering their progress. So in the Vash Green project, she's also doing the solar panels to help in electricity at night, because it can be quite costly. But if she's providing the solar panels, that's, I believe that's also one of the ways. Thank you.
And Isaac, and I think the initiative is amazing, and we need to hear more about these initiatives, and hopefully we inspire more people from our podcast to start initiatives like this as well. And when Ida was talking about policies, I was just reminded of this conversation I had with like an international consultant a few days ago, where this person said, when you go work in like other countries, especially in the global South, you should never go in thinking that you even know 1% of the problem, because that is the problem, because you actually know nothing. And that really stuck out to me, and I just thought I should share. So moving on to the end of this episode, to wrap it up on a solid note, we want to ask you, why is women's leadership and empowerment key to climate action?
It takes me back to saying women and girls are more than, you know, half the population. And one of the ways we can empower them is through education. So we should know that women can actually be powerful agents of change. They can be, they can have really good decisions. And, you know, research actually shows that initiatives led by women are more likely to be more successful. Isaac was talking about one Jennifer Musisi, who she was really a powerful woman, and her change will be felt for years to come in Kampala. So when you educate women, he also talked about educating a girl, a nation educated. So empowering women, educating women, putting them in leadership positions, it really is one of the solutions. So I think it's really important because of the building resilience, basically all the points Isaac talked about. Thank you.
The participation of women, you know, in climate change, you know, conversation is very, very important, because I believe, you know, they contribute, you know, a unique and valuable, you know, perspectives and expertise when it comes to climate change. As you may make a recap, you know, of take a recap of what I said, you know, at the beginning of, you know, of this conversation, these women, you know, they possess, you know, a wealth of knowledge when it comes to their environment, when it comes to, you know, everything that concerns, you know, nature. We must understand, even when a woman is learned, even when a woman is an elite, they have that knowledge of, you know, of the environment. Reason being, these are naturally, you know, stewards of their households. Before they become elites, lawyers or what, they'll grow up taking care of their homes, their gardens and stuff, water sources and everything. So we believe, you know, women leadership, you know, is very important when it comes to environmental governance, because they bring or they contribute, you know, substantial, you know, solutions, you know, to the climate spaces. And still, we must understand that as women, it's their nature, to, you know, to take care of, you know, things. This is something that is inborn. Even you, Sitasha, you'll be my witness. You're a steward of something. You like taking care of something. So it's something that is natural. So it's good, you know, to scale up something that is natural, you know, into, you know, environmental governance, into those climate spaces, because that will bring, you know, reasonable results, and we shall be able to achieve climate justice and have a sustainable and just future for all.
Thank you so much, Isaac and Ida, and completely agree with you, because women are the ones who, you know, have seen like water scarcity firsthand. Like, they're the ones who have reported like walking increased distances to collect water. And that's not even the only issue. There's just been so much, right? So completely agree with you that just female empowerment and climate solutions, like, they go hand in hand. But yeah, with that, we would like to end our conversation. Thank you so much, Aida and Isaac, and we are so inspired by you. We have learned so much from you, and we hope to just carry on this conversation because that's really important. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. You can listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and other platforms. You can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and TikTok. Links to these platforms will be in the description box.
We will be attaching links to the Rise Up Movement, Aida social media profiles, and relevant articles in the box below. We'll also be attaching Tashi's social media links below, so please check that out. Thank you so much. See you next month.